Whistleblower Report, exposing lies, deceptions, and all that has assaulted our way of life. We must take back our freedom and live as God designed in a free America that honors our Constitution and our Creator. Our experts in medicine, ministry, law, military, environment, and education empower us to grow together as a nation. For such a time as this, the Whistleblower Report offers truth and solutions. Welcome to the Whistleblower Report from Truth for Health Foundation. This is Dr. Lee for America, here with another team of our whistleblowers who are bringing you the truth about the lies, deceptions, and all of the assaults on our way of life, your freedom, and your life. For such a time as this, we are here to bring you truth, hope, and solutions. Check out our website, www.truthforhealth.org, for medical help, legal help, and all of the other resources. Join us in our Faith Over Fear seminars each Tuesday night via Zoom at 8 o'clock Eastern Time every week. And now, here is your host for today.
Well, welcome everybody. I'm Mike Gary, your host for the Whistleblower Report, and this is going to be another military segment, and it's just me today, and we're going to be discussing the current events that revolve around January 6th, and hopefully I will be sharing some unique and interesting information that you may have not heard before. In I am labeling this a military segment, so there is a unique military piece to this, which I do have a skill set that relates to this, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But I just want to thank all the Truth for Health Foundation donors for everything you've done over the last 3 years, supporting us in our legal defenses of military personnel and doctors, nurses, and other people that have needed help during this egregious time of illegal mandates that have wrecked our country. So I just want to put that out there and thank you for that. As you know, I had 26 years of military service. I still kind of am in. So I must give myself the disclaimer that I am representing myself today, not the DOD. I do not represent them in this transmission. I am a free man sharing my opinion and exercising my First Amendment right to that opinion. And as you know, I am a CBURN, chem, bio, rad, nuclear weapons expert. 15 years in the hazmat responder field, responding to things that were chemical, biological threats. Hardly ever seen a radiological threat, but we have responded to things like that, of that nature too. And this applies uniquely to the information I'm going to share with you today, because quite often I've been at large scale events. And when I say large scale events, it'd be like Super Bowl, the Pope coming to America, Boston Marathon, DNCs and RNC conventions, and, you know, any big type of crowd drawing event, especially things like the inauguration or even January 6th. So I can guarantee that on the day of January 6th, there was National Guardsmen there on standby with unique skills, whether they were crowd riot control type skills, or there was my probably sister hazmat response team from DC there, civil support team, weapons of mass destruction, and some other unique teams that were stationed on a standby notice in DC. So this is where my skills will come in handy and kind of discerning or kind of sifting through this information today. So I just kind of wanted to point that out. And why this is kind of like a flash report is we had yesterday the arrest of a journalist. And I'm going to open up with an article here from Just the News, written by Charlotte Hazard. It says a journalist now working as a correspondent for Blaze Media was taken into FBI custody on Friday. That is just yesterday. And today is March 2nd, for those of you who want to know. So we're referencing Friday, March 1st. Let's see, get back here. For entering the Capitol building on January 6th and reporting on the riot in 2021. The journalist, Stephen Baker, who was an independent journalist at the time of the riot, acknowledged in a joint statement of offense with the Justice Department in 2022 that he entered the Capitol to report on the incident, which included live streaming. You can read the statement here, so I'll include this link. There will be many links posted to support everything that I cover today and then some. So if you look at these links, they will take you other places. I am actually hoping to leave you with a very good timeline in the second half of the show today. Okay, so Stephen Maury Baker, statement of offense, it's attached. Baker has said on social media earlier this week that he had been cooperating with the FBI and that he would turn surrender to the authorities. I must turn myself into the FBI at 7 a.m. and then the FBI or marshals will transport me to Dallas courthouse where I can meet my attorney at 9:30 a.m. Baker wrote on social media platform X. I am then scheduled for a 10 a.m. hearing before the magistrate. Baker is facing charges of entering restricted grounds, disorderly conduct, and parading and picketing in the Capitol, according to Blaze colleague Sarah Gonzalez. Critics of how law enforcement agencies have handled arrests related to the riot have argued they have been overzealous in efforts to find and charge those who participated, and that those in custody have had to wait far too long for trial. In a recent interview with conservative commenter Glenn Beck, Baker said there is even more evidence of the insane corruption at the top of the Capitol Police. They are more powerful than Congress itself. That's an interesting statement that he gave to Glenn. Then there's another article here. It's called The Arrest and Persecution of Steve B Baker for Journalists for Journalism. And this is by M. Dowling, and it's dated yesterday, March 1st. The FBI arrested Turning Point Steve Baker, so he must have worked for them. And of course, he worked for a short time for the Blaze for reporting on January 6, 2021. More than 3 years after the fact, he was handcuffed. And if he were a danger, as if he were a dangerous perp, they even told him to wear shorts and sandals for his arrest today. That's crazy. Blaze contributor Jill Savage said he was able to wear his dress clothes, but had shackles on his wrists and ankles. When he left the courtroom, he's expected to be released today. His next hearing is set in DC for March 14th. Okay, so there'll be more on this coming up mid-month, so that'll be interesting. He is an investigative writer who searches for the truth. His most recent expose was the videos of the alleged J6 bomber the FBI couldn't seem to find. And we'll get into that a little bit here, too. He was arrested for journalism. And here's the bullet points under that: knowingly entering or remaining in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority, disorderly and disruptive conduct in a restricted building or grounds, disorderly conduct in the Capitol, parading, demonstrated picketing. Okay, just it's verifying what the last article said. His attorney said going after journalism has a chilling effect, and of course it does. I assume that's the goal. If you don't follow the narrative, they will come for you. He wouldn't abide by their humiliation process. The Democrats and their national police force, the FBI, it's so true, are arresting their political opponents, their lawyers, and now journalists and with opposing views. It's crazy where we're at. So what I wanted to say with that taken into consideration, it seems to me with this latest arrest of this journalist who was totally peaceful, just filming and reporting on January 6th, he did make his way inside the Capitol. But a lot of people did not know that was restricted area because of all the fences that were torn down and all the barricades that were moved and stuff like that. It seems like this is a step too far for the FBI, and I don't know they come back from this. I think as Americans are waking up in droves, you know, another great round of awakening happened with the arrest of Stephen Baker. And I think you don't recover from this as an agency like the FBI, because it now is no way to avoid. There's too many people that are aware that this is a political thing they did, a political arrest. They are no longer bipartisan or apolitical. They have a political stance, and they are definitely operating like the Nazi SS. And so this is the fear in our country now. There is a political reign, a tyrannical reign, and there is a Stasi of a type in our FBI that is going to come and get you if you do not follow their narrative. So that's where we're at. And I don't see how you fix that, because when you look inside the organization of the FBI, which is got to be, you know, like any police force or similar to the military, and I can speak from, when you get of a chains of command to go along with this stuff, you have got them to participate in wrong or evil in this case. And how do you redeem these people? Because they obviously don't know right and wrong. And as an organization, they've done many wrongs at this point. I just think this one is bringing such a great awakening around it. And I don't see the FBI recovering from it, because you, like I said, you have all these levels of supervision and management that have gone along with this. Everybody at this point knows this is political. And whether you're on the other side or the side that's of the people, you know, it's political. So there's no hiding from this anymore. I guess that's the thing, is it's all out there in the open. This sides are drawn. There's a line in the sand, and people kind of know which side they're on now. There's not too many people that are in the middle, you know, a big crowd in the middle anymore. People have had to pick a side, and that's where we're going in these next few days, weeks, few months before the 2024 election, if we have an election. So that's the way I look at this, is how, when you have taken people and like inside the FBI, and they've gone along with an arrest like this, they know they don't have the criteria to make the arrest properly, and all the other procedures that are you know, done around this haven't been done correctly. The people that did those things know they did it wrong. They know they broke, you know, whether they're policies, regulations, or the law themselves, they know. And the fact that they haven't done anything, and I'm referencing the people inside the FBI, right, that should have gone through their steps properly and followed the law. So how do you redeem this thing? I just don't see it. This is like in the military, where you're seeing the Secretary of Defense, I think it was just 3 days ago, he was questioned about the illegal or unlawful mandate they put on the military. And, well, he's not going to budge. And then nobody else below him that followed him in this unlawful act is going to budge. They're kind of like too deep too deep into the sin to be redeemed, which is very sad. It's sad to be here. Okay, I have another post here from X, and it's from Brianna Morello. She says on one of her posts, she says, "Why is Steve Baker's case so important? Steve Baker published evidence that proves the DOJ committed perjury during the Oath Keeper trial. He published details about the J6 pipe bomber. He's working on several major J6 stories. The DOJ slapped him with these charges to shut him up. But this isn't the time to stop speaking up. We all need to speak up." Okay, so that's enough about Steve Baker. This is just kind of like the catalyst to put out this GN6 story that I've had for a while, that I've been waiting to put it out at the opportune moment. And as we know, looking back a month, there's been all this conversation about the pipe bomb that Darren Beatty over at Revolver News has been just breaking up all this information and dropping all these truth bombs around the pipe bomb information. And so I've got this story of the plot thickens, damning new details emerge in Jan 6 pipe bomb cover up, Revolver News. And looking at it here, you know, it was Thomas, Representative Thomas Massie, that actually gave a lot of good information to Darren Beatty about the pipe bomb and the revelations that they've learned over the last couple months about it. And what I wanted to do is just read an excerpt here out of this story. Okay, it says, the first pipe bomb had been planted the evening before as well, okay? And so, like the DNC pipe bomb, it had been sitting where it was planted for over 16 hours before being discovered. So we were supposed to believe that the first pipe bomb was planted in a back alley behind a trash can, sat there for over 16 hours, and just happened to be randomly stumbled upon almost to the exact minute, as to be perfectly synchronized with the initial decisive attack on the west perimeter of the Capitol in the certification of the vote proceeding at 1 p.m. on January 6th. Furthermore, we were supposed to believe that after sitting for 17 hours undiscovered, the DNC pipe bomb is happened upon scarcely 15 minutes after the first pipe bomb is discovered, meaning that both pipe bombs have been sitting there for 16 and 17 hours respectively, and independently, randomly discovered within 15 minutes time frame, and perfectly coincides with the unfolding attack on the Capitol. The math and timing around this is like, boy, you should have bought a Megabucks ticket, right? Crazy. There's no mathematical way that could have all happened. And of course, the same Secret Service that somehow missed the DNC pipe bomb in its sweep is utterly nonchalant when informed of this pipe bomb, despite this being merely 15 minutes after the first pipe bomb was discovered. This leads us to the next question for the Capitol Police officials. Could they provide some explanation for the remarkable timing of the discovery of the DNC bomb? What were the circumstances under which it was discovered? Here we get another severely inadequate answer. According to the Capitol Police officials, they were around the first pipe bomb when it was discovered and figured after the discovery of the first pipe bomb that it would be worthwhile to check around the DNC. And they stumbled upon the DNC pipe bomb that had been out in the open, undiscovered by everyone, including the Secret Service, for 17 hours, and they discovered it merely 15 minutes after the first pipe bomb was discovered, under still less believable circumstances, okay? So, and the other thing is that's interesting. Okay, so you got the timing. They were both planted which the one they call the RNC bomb, which it was not at the RNC building, it was at the Capitol Hill Club, which was adjacent to the RNC. That was the first one discovered, okay? And then the DNC pipe bomb was discovered later, shortly thereafter, within like 20 minutes, all right around the 1 o'clock time frame on January 6th. The DNC one is significant because Kamala Harris, the would-be new vice president, was in the DNC building at that time. So when you go to this story I post, watch the links, watch the timing of these clips if you haven't already. I'm sure most everybody's watched these. You can see how the officers, the Capitol Police, and the Secret Service act. They act very nonchalant, like it's a drill, like it's training, like they know the pipe bombs are fake, inert. They don't work. They had egg timers. Egg timers good for like an hour. Yet both of them were set at like 15 minutes to going off, something like that. And which they couldn't have possibly been placed the night before and expected to go off with an hour timer. So again, there's so much inconsistency. Oh, this is what I want to say about this. Okay, I have years of setting up complex training evaluation lanes for the military. This was something, one of my unique skills that I was very good at. Not only the timing and choreographing or synchronizing of timelines, but the accuracy of how things worked. For example, this bomb, there is no way I would have missed this stupid 1 hour egg timer placed on this bomb to look accurate for what was supposedly placed a day before. This is a detail I would not, you know, because this blows up the whole training lane. It doesn't make any sense to a responding unit or like an EOD, Explosive Ordnance Division, to come across something like that that had been placed there the day before. It doesn't make any sense. You'd have to have some type of remote starter on it to make it make sense, not an egg timer that operates after being wound or set for the hour, if that makes sense. And so anyway, you can tell that these were government employees that did this because they missed the fine details. And this was something I always liked busting the evaluators on when they would evaluate my hazmat team. Is we would point out their inconsistencies in the training lane when they mess stuff like this up. So this looks right to me. This looks like paycheck collectors, 9 to 5 people that don't care. And again, you have this apathetic attitude all through the government. They're just collecting paychecks. They're going to say yes, yes, sir, yes, sir, and do whatever they're told to do, even if it's illegal, they will do it. So this is an apathetic attitude that's made it through the government. It's also bled its way quite deeply into our civilian culture as well. So anyway, the devil's in the details. Things got to look right. Things got to be right. And when they're not, you get all these good organizations like Revolver finding all these problems and inconsistencies. So this is nicely done by Darren Beatty. So anyway, I just want to put out good work to them on that. Now, moving on, there is, so that's the pipe bomb. We will go over the timing of that a little bit later. So there's another new thing that you may not know. And this is a story in the National File, which I will give a link to this. At approximately 2:30 p.m., there's a armed agitator that climbs the tower and he shoots off a couple rounds. So we don't know if they're blank rounds or real rounds, but nonetheless, the discharge was real. So there was a real powder charge that went off from what appears to be a real gun. And again, we don't know if they were blanks or real ammunition in this round. So what I'd like to do is read this story from the National File. It came out on the 8th of February, and it's titled Video J6 Footage Shows Armed Agitator fire two shots, sparking chaos. West Virginia congressional candidate and former J6 political prisoner Derek Evans has released J6 footage to the public showing an armed agitator firing two shots into the air and kicking off a riot. And it says previously unseen video footage released by J6 Patriot and American First congressional candidate Derek Evans for West Virginia. So if you're out there in West Virginia, make sure you vote for this young man. Go to his website. Check out what he's got. Derek Evans shows an armed agitator on January 6, 2021, climbing up scaffolding outside the U.S. Capitol and firing two shots into the air with what appears to be a revolver. I think it was actually a semi-automatic handgun. But anyway, you can look at that. The shots signal a turning point as the demonstrations descended into the chaos almost immediately after they were fired. Within 1 minute of the shots, police began using pepper spray against the demonstrators, and that escalated into the use of blast munitions and ultimately lethal force. What we're looking at here is a video taking from the West Lawn of the Capitol building. So make sure you go check out that video when you get a chance. A lot of people aren't aware of that story. Okay. That's some new information. Okay. What I want to do, before we go to the break here, I just want to let you in on what we're going to talk about on the second half. I've got a story about the DC National Guard, and I think it's a little unknown story. A lot of people aren't tracking this, but it's significant to the whole Jan 6 thing and where I was in the National Guard and know how they function and operate. I would like to share my opinions on this story and kind of enlighten you on it, because I have hardly seen this in the news, and a couple times I've grabbed a hold of it, I put it aside, but there's no real chatter on it. Nobody really wants to address it or talk, and that might be because they don't understand the operations on how responses work. And that's obviously a skill set that I have that I might be able to enlighten you on. So what we'll do when I come back from the break, we'll talk about this Colonel Earl G. Matthews, who has an interesting story to share from his perspective on January 6th. So, but we will be back in just a few minutes.
We live in a world full of disinformation, lies, and deceit, often from those institutions and individuals that we used to rely on and trust. In the chaos that surrounds us on a daily basis, it's difficult to find a place for truthful information and helpful guidance. Where can we turn for honest answers, critical solutions, and information that empowers us to be the person that God intended? The Truth for Health Foundation. The Truth for Health Foundation works every day to fight for your basic human rights. We have a track record of providing life-saving emergency actions that can improve your health and empower you with the tools to be safe, happy, and free to live your life. With over 100,000 supporters around the world, we are a critical voice of truth in today's world. We invite you to join our community of financial supporters so that we can continue to be your trusted partner for health, for life, for resilience. Join us today by giving now.
Welcome back to the second half of the show. I'm Mike Gary, your host, and you know me as Major Mike Gary, the Seaburn officer, and I'm sharing this military segment of our whistleblower report with you, and here's where this goes more military and discussing the January 6th piece of it. We have here Colonel Earl G. Matthews of the Washington, D.C. National Guard. I have a story here out of the nationalpulse.com. It says explosive report. Army official says Mark Milley, delayed National Guard response to Jan 6, then lied about it. Okay, so this is a really big, bold statement, and this guy is steadfast in his view. I saw this report come out shortly after January 6th, and then I just saw it recently in probably late 2023 come out, or early 2024 come out. And so anyway, 2 years of difference, and he's still holding to his story, this Colonel Matthews. So it says here, Colonel Earl G. Matthews, senior legal advisor to Major General William J. Walker, who commanded the Washington, D.C. National Guard on January 6, 2021, has blamed former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Mark Milley for letting the protests get out of hand. The colonel compared the now retired Milley to the murderous Don Emilio Brazzini, who served as Don Vito Corleone's arch nemesis in The Godfather. Milley controlled the army, Matthews told reporter Neil McCabe, arguing that while the Joint Chiefs boss lacked legal authority within the chain of command, he instead leveraged his profound influence and contacts in the Pentagon to delay the Guard's response. The problem was not with Donald Trump, it's Mark Milley and the Army leadership in control. They stopped the Guard from coming, then lied about it, and said the Guard acted at sprint speed, Matthews explained. Milley is the Don Brazzini of the deep state, the most powerful chairman of Joint Chiefs in history, continued. It was Milley all along, and I didn't realize it. Milley was manipulating this entire stuff from point start. This is about civilian control of the military. There was none. There is none. I argue that Mark Milley had more control over the D.C. Guard on Jan 6 than Donald Trump did. If Donald Trump wanted to call the Guard to go to the Capitol, Milley wouldn't let him do it. Major General Walker, who commanded the D.C. Guard until April 2021, previously testified that he had asked the Army leadership to authorize the deployment of the Guard as soon as then-Chief of U.S. Capitol Police Stephen Sund requested it, but he was kept waiting for 3 hours and 19 minutes. Okay, so this is actually a good, really good summary of the problem here. It's well, and I understand for civilians, it might not be that easy to understand. Okay, so you have the District of Columbia, which has the Pentagon in it, and it has all the brass of the military there, which is unusual. You know, it's unusual for a big event to be in DC, where you've got all this complicated chain of command problems. Okay, when you work a Super Bowl event or some other big event for homeland purposes, it's usually a clear-cut chain of command, no problems. You got a civilian in control, whether it's a you know, the city mayor, the city fire chief, police chief, the state police. Usually you have what is called an incident commander or a joint command, and that's clear-cut. You know who that person is or who those people are that make up that. So anyway, in this episode here in DC, it wasn't so clear cut. Okay, it should have been, and it was to the people that are used to handling the responses within the District of Columbia. Okay, so it was clear cut. So Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund knew he just needed to ask for help from General Walker. Major General Walker is the tag, as they call it, the adjutant general. That's what the tag stands for. He asks him for help, and Major General Walker obliges him, and he sends help. Whatever the help is they pre-planned, he sends it. Okay, there was a lot of planning on the build-up to this thing, and nothing out of the ordinary for the Capitol Police, the municipal police in town there, and then the National Guard, the D.C. National Guard, that's there. Okay, so nothing out of the ordinary. These guys know how to work with together. They have good relationships. They know how to do responses. They've practiced, trained together all the time. There's a lot of stuff going on in DC, so they do this all the time. Okay, so what I want to try to leave you with is these people that work there, they know how to handle the District of Columbia. Now, the fly in the ointment here is the Pentagon. Okay, this is the piece that is problematic. So when this article and this Colonel Earl Matthews is talking about General Milley as being the problem, he's absolutely right. General Milley has no business being in this response incident, okay? Because that's not what he does. It's not his skills. He runs big army, okay? Big military, okay? That's his strategic spot. He doesn't dabble down into the tactical world. This is a tactical operation when it became a so-called riot. And the police chief and the adjutant general know how to work together. They do it all the time. Okay, so I just want to make that very clear that the active component had no business being in this. And technically, the tags, they are appointed by the governors of every state. In this case, not exactly sure how the tag is appointed in DC, but he is very much ordered, can be ordered around by the president. Okay, so Donald Trump. And that's where Donald Trump requested him to be in a standby posture. And then merely the other first responder types, the Capitol Police in this case, would ask, request his help, and he would oblige them and do that. Okay, so that's how that all operates there. I've been a part of many of these events. The main Army Guard, which I used to be a part of, wasn't down there on this day, but it wouldn't have been highly unlikely for many other states to send National Guardsmen to help out the DC National Guard in an event like this. Okay. We do that stuff all the time. That's what the National Guard's there for. Okay. And always the concern is posse comitatus. So I'm going to read that to you. The Posse Comitatus Act is a United States federal law. It's 18 U.S. Code, subsection 1385. Okay. Signed on June 18th, 1878 by President Rutherford B. Hayes, which limits the powers of the federal government in the use of the federal military personnel to enforce domestic policies within the United States. Congress passed the act as an amendment to an Army appropriation bill following the end of the Reconstruction and updated it in 1956, 1981, and 2021. The act originally applied only to the United States Army, but subsequent amendment in 1956 expanded its scope to the United States Air Force. And in 2021, National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2022 further expand the scope of the act to cover United States Navy, the Marine Corps, Space Force. The act does not prevent the Army National Guard or the Air National Guard under state authority from acting in a law enforcement capacity within its home state or in an adjacent state if invited by the state's governor, the United States Coast Guard, and is covered by the act, either primarily because although it is an armed service, it also has a maritime law enforcement mission. Okay, so I just want to get that straight. The National Guard supplements local authorities, okay? And that's how I've been trained. We never take over a situation. We always support the situation. In a lot of the responses I've done, have I helped an incident commander make decisions? Absolutely. Have I guided him and almost picked the answers sometimes for him? Yes. However, it's still his decision. He owns it. And we're merely people that suggest answers and help them through the event or the situation or the incident. So this is very, very familiar territory for me, and I've done it, been on many of these things, and had success at many events, and this one did not operate properly, referencing January 6, 2021. And so what I have, and I can't read this whole document, but what out of January 6, as you can imagine, all these different agencies that were a part of it, there was after action reviews or inspector general investigations and reports done after them. Naturally, there was one for the DOD. It's called the DOD IG investigation. And I think you can find it easy enough. I'm not, and I believe it's footnoted here in Colonel Earl Matthews' rebuttal to the IG report. Okay. So I think you can go find it if you really want to. But essentially, what's going to go on here is, and I'm, as I read some excerpts, is Matthews is going to call out the IG for lying. And he's going to call the report bogus. Okay, so I'll give that to you up front. And I just want to say this too. I've had my own IG complaint against my chain of command, against the unlawful COVID mandates and a whistleblower retaliation. You know, I was fired out of the main Army Guard. So, and when I did my IG complaint, I had one investigator who was actually doing his job. I think he was really trying to be to do the right thing. They replaced him, and the second guy essentially broomed my IG complaint closed. My IG complaint was open for 7 months, I believe. The last 2 months was the second investigator who basically broomed it shut. So anyway, I can sympathize with this Colonel Earl Matthews and validate the fact that the DOD IG is nothing but a lip service in a cover operation for the Pentagon. Okay. So I'm sorry to break your confidence in the military. I hope I'm not doing that. But this is what's really going on. And this is why there's an accountability declaration out there to hold these people at these levels in the Pentagon accountable for the lies they've told, essentially. Because this one's a big one, Jan 6. This report by Colonel Matthews is titled The Hard Right, an analysis of a recent DOD Inspector General investigation in other matters. He wrote this 1 December of 2021. Okay. He says, may we ever choose, excuse me, may we ever choose the harder right instead of the easy wrong, Thomas Monson. The purpose of this memorandum is to outline in detail the myriad of inaccuracies, false or misleading statements, or examples of faulty analysis contained in a recent publicly released Department of Defense Inspector General report of its investigation into the DOD's actions leading up to and in response to a violent assault on the U.S. Capitol, which occurred 6 January 2021. This memorandum will also detail a series of false and misleading statements or documents deliberately made or submitted to the DOD IG and or to the House Oversight and Reform Committee by senior officers in the United States Army. This memorandum will conclusively show that at least two general officers of the Army engaged in repeated violations of 18 U.S. Code 907, 1001, 1621. One of these general officers now leads an Army Service Combatant Command. The others will soon be nominated to lead an Army Command. Although written in the third person, the recollections expressed are those of Major General William J. Walker, U.S. Army, who is serving as commanding general of the District of Columbia National Guard on the date in question, which is that tag position I said, and Colonel Earl G. Matthews, United States Army, who then served as his staff judge advocate. The inspector general investigations are usually and appropriately accorded great deference because they are normally unbiased, independent, contain careful analysis of the facts, circumstances, and because they make determinations as to the credibility, veracity, and basis of particular witnesses based on the predominance of the evidence. Unfortunately, the DOD IG report on its investigation into DOD actions leading up to and during the 6 January attack was marked by few of these characteristics. Bam. The DOD IG report relied heavily on close associates of Lieutenant General Walter Piatt and other Army staff principals, and the DOD IG failed to interview numerous District of Columbia National Guard personnel. Okay. So here we get the big army all being in part of the investigation, but the people that were supposed to respond, the National Guard, were not involved. Okay. So this is an interesting thing. Okay. Okay. So a review of key events beginning at 1:49 p.m. on 6 January 2021, Major General Walker began to receive a series of frantic telephone calls from the chief of the U.S. Capitol Police, Stephen Sund, informing Major General Walker that the security perimeter at the U.S. Capitol had been breached by hostile rioters. Chief Sund, his voice crackling with emotion, indicated that there was a dire emergency on Capitol Hill and requested the immediate response of the D.C. National Guard. It should have happened. It just should have happened, okay? At roughly 2:30 p.m. On January 6th, during the 2:30 conference call, Chief Sund of the Capitol Police pleaded for immediate support of the D.C. National Guard at the U.S. Capitol as the security perimeter at the Capitol was being breached at that very moment. Chief Conti reinforced Chief Sund's request. Chief Conti asked Chief Sund aloud if he was requesting immediate D.C. Guard support at the Capitol. Chief Sund replied, yes. Chief Conti then asked Lieutenant General Pyatt if the D.C. Guard would be sent to the Capitol. Lieutenant General Pyatt stated that it would not be his best military advice to recommend to the Secretary of the Army that the D.C. Guard be allowed to deploy to the Capitol at the time. Lieutenant General Pyatt stated that the presence of the uniformed military personnel could inflame the situation and that the police were best suited to be handled, to handle the situation. Both Lieutenant General Pyatt and Lieutenant General Flynn, which is Charles Flynn, which is the younger brother of Mike Flynn, interestingly, stated that the optics of having uniformed military personnel deployed to the U.S. Capitol would not be good. Okay, so I'm going to cut this short here. There's two generals that are problems, Lieutenant General Pyatt and Lieutenant General Charles Flynn. They didn't want the bad optics of what would look like the military responded to the Capitol. However, I say if the DC Guard was allowed to do what they were supposed to do, this would have stopped everything, okay? Because what you had was mostly a peaceful crowd, except for the rioters, which we'll talk about more when I do this timeline here. And the people might have taken commands to back off, or at least the DC Guard could have got up there with the Capitol Police and reestablished the lines and barricades. My guess is that could have happened relatively quickly, within an hour or two, and the perimeter could have been reestablished, people pushed back off and put out where they were supposed to be. Again, nefarious actors tore down barricades and fences, and peaceful people ended up walking into areas they thought were authorized and they were not authorized. This would have saved everything, okay? However, for some reason, the active component got involved, and the Secretary of the Army, who was beholden to General Milley, had the authority to release the DC Guard, which is a weird thing, okay? And for some reason, that was put in place that day. And my guess is it never existed in prior responses. Okay, I can't totally 100% that. But my guess is when the Capitol Police need help, the tag of the DC would send reinforcements or whatever you needed immediately. The adding of the active component, the Secretary of the Army, complicated this and made it a political problem. Okay. We are going to go into the timeline of Jan 6. I'm hoping to leave you guys a working document with timestamps. This timeline is mostly built off a good documentary, a video documentary that I found on Rumble that will be attached here. But if we go back to January 5, okay, we're going to, at 7:34 to 8 p.m., the pipe bomber places a pipe bomb at the DNC area between those times. On January 5, between 8 p.m. and 8:18 p.m., this nefarious pipe bomber places a pipe bomb at the Capitol Hill Club, which they call the RNC. Also remember, on January 5, Ray Epps is seen saying, "We need to go into the Capitol building," and people call him out for being a Fed. Okay, so now I'm going to move into January 6 timelines. At 1 a.m., Jan 6, President Trump tweets, "If Vice President at Mike Pence comes through for us, we will win the presidency. Many states want to decertify the mistake they made in certifying incorrect and even fraudulent numbers in a process not approved by their state legislatures, which is must be. Mike can send it back." And then if we go to 11:25 a.m., Kamala Harris and her Secret Service detail go to the DNC building. At 11:35 a.m., a group of Proud Boys is already gathered on the east side of the Capitol, according to videos of one scene. At 11:57 a.m., Mr. Trump takes the stage to address thousands of supporters. "We will stop the steal," he says. "You'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength, and you have to be strong." He tells supporters to march to the Capitol and promises to join them. He returns to the White House. Thousands of protesters head toward the Capitol. That started at 11:57, okay? So at 12:01 p.m., Trump starts to speak, and he's at the Ellipse near Washington Monument, 1 mile away from the Capitol. At 12:04, a group of Proud Boys start to march around the Capitol. 12:16, first mentioned by Trump to walk down to the Capitol. "Cheer on our great senators." 12:17, he says the words, Trump says the words, peacefully and patriotically in his speech. At 12:30, large group heads to the Capitol. 12:30 and a little bit after, Ray Epps directs people to the Capitol. So he's in between where Trump's speaking at the Washington Monument and the Capitol directing people. At 12:35, Mike Pence's motorcade is seen headed towards the Capitol. 12:45, large crowd gathers in the Peace Circle, which is near the Capitol building. And then we have 12:50 to 12:55, you have what I call role players, Antifa, or federal informants start to gather and start to make trouble at the outer barricades, which were these bike racks. At 12:53 p.m., then Vice President Mike Pence releases a letter in which he says he doesn't have authority to overturn the will of the voters, rejecting pressure from President Trump. "I do not believe that the founders of our country intended to invest the vice president with unilateral authority to decide which electoral votes should be counted during the joint session of Congress," he said. At 12:54, the first group reaches the west side of the Capitol and begins to clash with officers shoving and yelling "traitors." This would be this Antifa group. At 1 p.m., Mr. Pence and senators walk to the House chamber to begin the joint session convened to decertify the Electoral College result. Certify. 1 o'clock, also at the same time, Trump still speaking. At 101, United States Capitol Police Deputy authorizes less than lethal to be the less than lethal team to be in place. At 106, less than lethal order to launch. At 107, DNC pipe bomb was found by law enforcement in a canine. At 107, the first round or volley of less than lethal was used. At 111, Mr. Trump concludes his speech at the ellipse. 117, proceeding in Congress is challenged. Okay, so this is the first challenge. At 121, excuse me, third discharge into the crowd and first flashbang grenade CS used in the crowd at 1:21 p.m. Excuse me, I missed a couple things. I got to go back here. At 1:13, Ray Epps speaking with Capitol Police officer calls for more munitions. That's Officer Thau calls for more munitions. At 1:15, Benjamin Phillip dies of a heart attack. He's loaded into an ambulance. That's the first guy to die. At 1:24, Officer Thau, who is an interesting character if you ever watch the movie, this Officer Thau fires smoke grenades and flashbangs into the crowd. At 1:28, Kevin Greason died of a heart attack. That's the second guy to die. 1:32, an officer states that shooting grenades is making things worse. So there was an active debate amongst the Capitol Police about what was right and what was wrong to do. Also at 1:34, Officer Thau is reprimanded for use of smoke on the crowd. So he's actively reprimanded. You can see that on the film. At 1:35, Ray Epps is directing up and down the line, which is the, you know, up against the new barricade line, looking to breach again the inner fences and barricades. At 1:38, Trump tweets, support law enforcement. At 1:40, a big Trump sign is used to breach the final Capitol line, okay? And Ray Epps is at the back of that Trump sign, pushing it against, and it breaches. At 1:41, officers discussing the use of CS gas. Should we have used it? No, they shouldn't have used it because it's dangerous, especially shooting into a crowd, okay? At 1:49, declared officially a riot, okay? At 1:50, CP gas or CS gas the crowd and get themselves. Oh, the Capitol Police gas the crowd and they get themselves, okay? They actually do take themselves out. At 1:59, big breach on the east side, so on the other side of the Capitol. The west side was the primary side. At 2:01 p.m., the guy that was on the ledge, Derek Vargo, was pushed off by the Capitol Police for the attempted murder. 2:03 p.m., first dispersal alarm, and it's supposed to alarm three times to disperse a riot. At 12:12, Ray Epps texts, I orchestrated this event. 12:13, Trump texts, peaceful, peaceful. At 2:18 p.m., Officer Thau, he says, it's like shooting zombies. This, you should see this guy. This guy is just, every time he gets ammunition in his weapon, he's firing it off at the crowd. It's like stirring up a hornet's nest is what this guy does. It's crazy. At 2:18, another argument about shooting innocent people. 2:24, Trump tweets, Pence didn't have the courage. 2:25, Officer Thau misfires a CS canister and he breaks the final line up top and the Capitol Police have to disperse. I mean, this guy's an idiot. 2:28, a press reporter takes film inside the Capitol. Ooh, maybe that's Steve Baker. 2:28, Capitol Police get even more aggressive. 2:30, Mayor Bowser issues a 6 p.m. curfew. 2:33, a police officer is angry They were set up. They're actively discussing. We were set up. We were set up. Shouldn't have been this way. 2:35 p.m. Another CS gas. Friendly fire. 2:40 p.m. Interesting conversation going on by the police. So they knew there was something up, that they weren't supported by their chain of command. Interesting. 2:44, Ashley Babbitt is shot by Michael Bard. So she's the third one that dies that day. And then 2:50, big flag. Oh, there's a big flag and they're singing by the crowd, which is interesting. Let me see what else I got here for times. That was at 2:30. The house is abruptly adjoined at 2:30. So this is what's going on inside. House lawmakers are told to be prepared to hide under their chairs in the Senate chamber. 2:44 p.m., with rioters surging into the Capitol, an officer fires a shot outside the House chamber at a woman, which is Ashley Babbitt, like I said. 4:17, later in the day here, in a recorded statement, Mr. Trump tells protesters to go home. You have to go home now. We have to have peace. We love you. You're very special, he says. At 4:28, Roseanne Boylan is CS gassed, and she has blue lips, and she's probably dead at that time. Shortly after 5 p.m., law enforcement officers in riot gear, the largest show of force of the day, deploy in front of the entrance of the Capitol position for concerted effort to clear the hundreds of protesters still encircled in the Capitol, okay? And this is probably when the D.C. Guard finally helps, too. And then 6:01, Mr. Trump tweets, these are the things and events that happen when a sacred landslide of victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots. Okay. So that's what I'm going to give you. We're getting a little long in this show. That should be a lot to work with. The Substack will have that timeline with some additions to it. And that should be a good note taker for you, or something that you can adjust and use later on. And that is my intent with the show today, as we get more and more into this January 6th unfolding or unraveling. And as we, the people, kind of take our country back from this rogue government. All right. I want to thank everybody for listening today. Thanks to the donors who sign up to give donations, as your donations have helped our nation's finest fight for our rights. And go to www.truthforhealth.org. Join our crusade. We are silent no more. Sign up for our email alerts and check out all our resources that we provide, from medical advice to ministry help and constitutional right information. So for now, I've given you a lot of information, hopefully some new information. And you can use this to help support the fight, because information is what we need to turn the tide here. This is Mike Gary signing off.